So Campolo, the great managing partner of the great firm Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick. You know about the three locations, of course. You know about Westbury. You know about Riverhead. And, of course, the hub in Ronkonkoma. 7389100, CMMLLP.com. One of Forbes on the list. Great list as far as top law firms in this country. Managing partner Joe with a great blog. Off the record, the idea came about. Let's go on the show with it. Off the record, on the record, the great Joseph Nicholas Campolo. Sir, how are you?
Jay, good morning. I think, unfortunately, we found ourselves in another boring news cycle, so it'll be hard to find things to talk about this morning.
In Chicago last night, we'll kind of take a little bit of a turn here, sir. So, in essence, man, I'll tell you, I don't even know where to begin. You know, I'm driving around... First of all, I'm driving around. I'm seeing this thing unfold in West Hempstead in a grocery store. I'm thinking, oh no, not Boulder again here, not Boulder East. You know, that was the first thing that came to my mind. And you know, listen, one person dead, that's never good. And they got the guy. And then, of course, driving around late yesterday afternoon, I didn't have my glasses on, but I kind of looked closely at the phone and said, the verdict is in. I raced home. And sitting on pins and needles, and God, I was hoping they got this right, because if they didn't, look out. But quite a day yesterday, Mr. C. Give me your thoughts.
You know, Jay, last time you and I spoke on the show, I ended the segment with the comment that, you know, America is an idea, right? America, this nation was formed with the idea that if we continue to progress, never stop trying to do better, we'll become a better, stronger nation. And I think, you know, I think yesterday's verdict in the Floyd case is another step in that direction. You know, I think there's really three, in my mind, three important takeaways from that verdict. You know, the number one key takeaway is justice for the black community. I mean, our history between the justice system and the black community is terrible. You know, we've gone from lynchings in this country's history, and I think it was incredibly important to the black community to see that a white police officer can get convicted and can get convicted of murder for their actions. What a long progress that has been, what a painful progress for the black community, and I think it's very important that conviction came out the way it did. All counts. You know, I kind of joked around and said, you know, if he had been charged with jaywalking, he would have been convicted on that too. The jury was sending a very clear message, and I'm proud of them. I'm really, really proud of them for sending that message. I think it also, though, from my perspective, you know, being white, and not having that that black perspective on it, but I think from an American perspective, all American perspective, it gave us a little bit more trust in the police overall. You know, in this case, the chief of police himself testified that that Derek Chauvin violated policy. Okay, and why is that important? Because that blue line of silence that permeates throughout law enforcement and has in the past, was broken publicly by the chief of police here. And that's really, really important. And anybody who doesn't understand how dangerous that is to our system, right here on Long Island, we had it with Burke and Spoda. It's super, super scary for every American, that blue line of silence where police officers just aren't going to talk about the actions of other police officers. So I think that was a huge move forward to get trust in police departments in whole. And you know, the third takeaway is we still have a lot of work to do with regard to the roles of the police department in society. You know, race aside, you know, only Derek Chauvin knows what was in his heart, whether it was racist or not. Okay. But it was clearly not an act of humanity. I mean, the police department is supposed to be there to protect, and serve, right? Those are the mottos of the police department. And George Floyd was a human being, if you know, and a police officer should not treat a human being that way. Somebody who couldn't breathe, has his knee on his neck for almost 9 minutes. It's we've gotten away from dignity of humanity. We've gotten away from a relationship between the police department and citizens where there's humanity that interacts. You know, it's become a paramilitary police force, and I understand there's really dangerous people out there. I really do, but it's like a chicken and egg thing where force meets force, and now escalates up to where police departments have Humvees and tanks and SWAT teams and everything else, and we've lost somewhere just the dignity of all of our citizens. So I think, you know, when I look at it, I say it's a step forward in the right direction on all those things. I think for race relations, it was incredibly important. It was a predominantly white jury, and they were unanimous on all the counts, which is wonderful. You know, and to see police officers step up, especially the chief of police step up and say, nope, that's not who we are, that's not what we do, and that's not how we do it, and he was wrong, was critical. And the key takeaway in terms of how we need to continue to progress, though, is we gotta start getting back to a sense of the police department and the communities acting with respect and dignity towards one another. I think that's going to be the key focus, I think, moving past this verdict.
Joe, it's going to be fascinating in years to come. And you know there's going to be book deals and everything else for these 12. I mean, you talk about, and listen, I even kind of correlated coming back from the moon with astronauts, you know, going from one end of the country to the other, talk shows, you name it. It's going to happen because they did something yesterday when this verdict came in at 2 minutes after 5 Eastern time that will really mark the date in our country's history based on everything we're going through right now. But I think it's going to be a fascinating read into time, the mindset of what these 12 were going through in deliberations for 10 and a half hours. We know it ended early. The other night, they had the day yesterday, and they came back. You know, a lot of people were surprised regarding a quick verdict. I was not. I thought it would be quick. I thought if it would carry over into today, that's when you have doubt maybe settle in. That could be a disaster if those who are hoping for an all-count a guilty deal. But with that being said, I'm just wondering how much played into it with the 12 of what they thought the ramifications could be if they did not get this right. And maybe that's why this thing came in at record time. You know, knowing that even if they gave him a pass on murder too, which I thought there was a possibility in 10, you know, as compared with depravity and everything else in 3, I thought there was a possibility there. But they came back quickly, all 3 guilty. I'm just wondering if there was any type of discussion saying, you know what, guess what? We don't get this. We got to do something right now for this country. This country is reeling. We got to get it right. And I'm wondering if the foreman kind of led off with that mindset and everything else. What do you think went on behind closed doors?
You got it exactly right, Jay. The power of the jury is they are the most powerful force in this country. You know, in law school, they teach about the power of a jury with a case of John Peter Zenger, and it's the case of seditious libel, and I guess it's back in the 1600s. The government made it completely illegal to say anything negative about a government, not here in the U.S., obviously, but there was a jury trial, and the jury basically did not convict somebody who clearly admitted that he committed the crime, and that really turned in human society the wave of community standards, right? The wave of where, you know, 11 or 12 or whatever the number is in the jurisdiction of people from that community, right, are gonna have the final say as to what they're willing to tolerate as community standards. And what this jury did, look, they could have very easily said manslaughter. They could have very easily said that, right? And that would have been gotten them off the hook, right? But this jury, with their verdict, said enough is enough. We, as the 12 people in this jury, we have to set this country on another trajectory. And those 12 people, Here we have how many, 550 members of Congress and all these presidents and everybody, and we can't get this country going in the right direction. And these 12 ordinary people from their community have set this country on a completely different trajectory right now in the area of race relations, police reform. It's amazing, the power of a jury. And I'm super, super proud of them for taking that decisive action and just saying enough. We've had enough here in America. You know, we've just had enough of all of this, and we need to move in another direction, in a better direction. And that's what this jury did. Amazing, amazing point in our country's history. People don't realize it yet, but this is going to be written about as one of the greatest moves towards peace, towards getting closer in terms of equal justice, in terms of getting police reform moving. Right? Because now police officers know that a jury will convict them. Okay? And that is going to be the checks and balances when they're out there in the field. Look, I have the utmost respect for law enforcement. My hat goes off to them every single day. They go out there and they're in harm's way. Okay? And they really work hard and they're really good people. Okay? But some of them aren't. And those that aren't are now know that a jury is not going to tolerate it anymore, because there are very, very, very few instances where police officers have ever been convicted of murder. And now there's a huge, huge stamp by a jury saying, if you cross the line, you're going to pay the price, pal. And that's huge, huge. So really, it's an amazing historical moment for this country in terms of healing and moving forward in race relations, all from a jury. Well, from a little old jury, and that's what I love about America. That's what I love about our system so much.
Joe Campolo with us, of course, author and on the radio. Joe, I would have, and I've stated this, listen, I'm not an attorney, nor do I play one on the radio. I guess I can today, though. But I would have done a Hail Mary here based on all the evidence, video, unprecedented stuff that we have never seen, 929 and everything else. I would have put my client on the stand. I would try to have humanized him as best as I could. Now, listen, people forget you got 18 flags against this guy from the past. Also, a little bit of past history with him and Floyd. Not brought up a lot either. We brought it up. Not brought up a lot. And it wasn't good. You know, in the club and everything else, working security. But still, if I'm Eric Nelson, I would have even had a second thought. Didn't get the change of venue. I thought that was detrimental to the case. I would have put my guy in the stand and take my chances. Now, Chauvin might not have gone along with that, but if I'm Derek Chauvin and Eric Nelson suggested it, I'm going to say, let's go for it. Let's do it. Because I got nothing to lose right now. Because you know it's stacked against you in such a massive way. What about the aspect of not putting this guy, I mean, that's the only chance that this guy had, was telling a story and explaining the story as far as Chauvin entering the force, why he, you know, that type of thing. Just humanize him a little bit. Try and paint a little bit of a different picture to that jury, because again, you only want to insert one element of doubt in the mindset, one to one juror. That's it. Put him on the stand, Joe. Why not?
I totally agree, Jay. I totally agree. You're playing lawyer very well this morning. I mean, I didn't understand that at all. Look, the only reason this went to trial is because they couldn't get a plea, and that was obvious. The prosecutor's office was, you know, they were playing for manslaughter. They were playing for manslaughter, the defense. That's all that they could be playing for. There was no way they were going to get any sort of acquittal. The facts just didn't warrant it from the video. So you're playing for manslaughter, and the only reason it went to trial, I'm sure, is because the prosecutor wasn't offering up manslaughter. Politically, he must have said no way. You know, take murder three and move on. And they weren't going to agree to a murder conviction, which I understand, right? I understand that you want to play for manslaughter. But the only play I thought for manslaughter was to put Chauvin on the stand and get him to say, look, I just had a bad day, or something that would humanize him, so the jury would say, all right, I don't think he intended to murder this person. I think he was just reckless and had a bad day, and it happened, and it's manslaughter, right? that would have been the only play. I totally agree with it. Why they didn't do it, I don't know. They had to be playing for manslaughter, and without putting him on the stand, and with that very, very damaging, I mean, the prosecutor did a meticulous job of getting very, very damaging testimony against him. I didn't see how they could not put him on the stand, but they chose not to. The judge questioned them about it, and guilty on all counts. I mean, I from a lawyer's perspective, his defense lawyer, I can't imagine, in modern times, I can't imagine a lawyer having a more difficult job to do than he did. I thought the defense did as good a job as they could, but if they were playing for manslaughter, I tend to agree, and it's, revisionist history, but I tend to agree that putting him on the stand and getting just one juror to say, "Nah, he didn't really intend to do it, he was just being reckless," would have resulted in manslaughter.
So fast forward with the appeal, you must, Joe, get a change of venue here. You have to have that in play. First and foremost, that has to be on the desk of Peter Cahill today. You are requesting a change of venue. It has to be. I'd be shocked if that wasn't the case. What do you think here?
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting appeal issues. Change of venue is definitely one of them. Although I suspect they're going to say, not too many people on the planet had not witnessed that video, and therefore it wouldn't matter what community, and a jury should be from your own community, a jury of your peers judging you, right? So, but it's certainly going to be a huge issue raised on appeal. I think another interesting issue that's going to be raised on appeal is the fact that the jurors were able to take their phones in with them when they were sequestered, right? So when a jury and back pre-cell phone, juries being sequestered, they were sequestered. They had no access. They were allowed to make one telephone call to their, to their families to let them know that they were in court and they were being sequestered. And these jurors, while they were sequestered and deliberating, were allowed to have their phones. And having your phone means. It means you have access to the, to the world. And why that's important is because a lot of discussion was being had, even by the president. President Biden made a comment about how he hopes this jury gets it right with a conviction. And those are the things that you want to not have a jury have access to or be influenced by. So I'm sure that's going to be raised on appeal. So it's going to be an interesting argument that they have on appeal. The interesting thing about this conviction, though, is it's on all counts, right? It's on all counts, and it's going to be hard to overturn a jury conviction on all counts. But there are going to be some very, very interesting legal arguments that are going to be raised on appeal.
Fascinating. Fast forward into August with the three other officers involved with this. They will be tried together. So that is just going to be fascinating as we turn into August and await. The carryover effect, ramifications, and everything else. That is a very interesting situation that will be brewing over the summer. Very interesting with those three police officers, Joe.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see if they're going to take a plea now, right? I'm curious to see if they just take a plea. Jury has made it clear that juries just aren't going to tolerate this anymore, right? And they got to seriously be thinking about, let me take a plea. For Chauvin, I always understood why he wouldn't be seeking a plea, because the only offer I'm sure he was given was murder. It'll be interesting to see the sentence he gets, right? Is it a life sentence? It'll be interesting to see. And it's going to be fascinating, like you say, to see how the other co-defendants play their hand now strategically. But I think this jury has set a mark for what everybody's kind of feeling in this country, and that is we got to move past it. Our elected officials are not getting us past it, so we, the American people, as citizens and juries, are going to move us past this, and I love that so much.
And I'll say this, and we'll move on to some other subjects in the time remaining. I think also it set a very important mark yesterday as far as training and everything else. Now, listen, Minnesota has been horrendous over the years. We know that. Numerous incidents. Brooklyn Center, wait till we have that whole thing with Kim Potter. But, you know, if anything, it accentuates the need to examine a little bit more everywhere, around the country, everywhere. We have to figure this out as far as the training process, the vetting process, people who need time off, people who've been on the job maybe a little too long, as what we saw in Virginia a couple of weeks ago with Lieutenant Rosario there, at gunpoint, being told to get out of his car, somebody who has served our country, continues to serve, even stating that and gets pepper sprayed because they couldn't find his license plate. And you talk about profiling there. So we have to re-examine a lot of things. Now, I'm not talking defunding. That's not the answer. Okay, you defund, you see what happens as far as New York is concerned with the numbers and everything else just escalating beyond. But we have to do a better job understanding. And, you know, one of the things we do very well here on Long Island is get involved with the community. Now, you listen to the Sheriff Toulon's out there. You listen to the Risco Lewis's we heard the other day. They get out there. They want to understand the needs of the public, of the community. Get involved. And I think that's what's lacking around the country when we see these types of incidents. And hopefully it sets a mark yesterday that, you know what, we've turned the corner. Hopefully we have. Now, listen, we're not going to know right away. You know, you'll be able to examine studies and everything else 10 years from now and everything. But at least it set a tone for what we need as far as policing in this country is concerned.
Yeah, Jay, you know, again, I really have the utmost respect for law enforcement. I really do. And I think, you know, I think all Americans do. There's just, we're at a point, again, where we've lost, you know, connectivity to the communities. We've lost the humanity factor. We've lost that people are human beings. And yeah, they sometimes do crazy and criminal things, but they're still human beings and they still have a right. Okay, to be treated accordingly. And I understand the pressures that go on in these inner cities. I can only imagine the stress and the adrenaline and the fatigue and the aggravation and the feeling that they get when they're disrespected continuously. Right? And so the other side of this is you know, we sent a clear message that police need better training and they need reform and they need to get back to serving the communities. But the flip side of that is we now have to hold people accountable, right, who are, you know, disrespectful and assault police officers, right? We can't allow what we saw in the protests and the riots last year to continue against police officers. We just can't. We have to send as strong a message to people who are going to assault and harm police officers, that will not be tolerated. That cannot be cheered. That cannot be applauded. That cannot be permitted. There has to be both sides of this equation that need to be, you know, dealt with. But, you know, the bigger piece of this all, I think, for me, is the police chief and the police department starting to take responsibility for, you know, for their actions. And we saw that, you know, in the Dante Wright shooting, we saw that as well. I mean, police officer Potter resigned and the chief of police resigned. You know, chief of police resigned. That was a big moment in police history, you know, where I take responsibility and I resign. And that's what we need to see more of. And I think we are. You know, I do think we are. I think there's a different tone and a different discussion that's going on inside of all police departments and law enforcement agencies now about serving the communities better and just trying to get a more respectful relationship with the communities. So I think both sides of those equations need to be enforced, and I really think that's where we're headed now. I don't know about you, but I just feel a lot more relieved today than I did yesterday, and I think that's a really strong sentiment that's being felt across America because of this.
I was on edge yesterday. But I felt good. The verdict came in as quickly as it did. I thought that was a great sign. And I thought, you know, I thought for a long time, maybe two or three, but when it came in as quick as it did, Three for three, I think, was a big thing for this country. We needed to celebrate something here. All walks, all races. It's about the criminal justice system and everything else. Listen, we needed this verdict yesterday, and I embraced those 12 men and women. I mean, they knew they had to get it right. They knew the pressures that existed. If they didn't look out, I mean, they would have been hunted down in years to come. I can guarantee they had to get this thing right, Joe. And I think they did get it right, without question. This country needed that. Worldwide headlines. Remember that day, April 21st, 2021. More with Joe. We'll take a quick break. Miss Carey will do a quick hit on the travels. More with Off the Record, On the Record, right after this. Back with Joe Campolo, managing partner of the great firm Campolo, Middleton and McCormick, a Forbes top corporate law firm, ladies and gentlemen. Not easy to do as far as being recognized by Forbes. They are CMMLP.com. You know, Joe, I'm driving around yesterday, and even before the verdict, and you know, listen, we all got the alerts on our phone with what was going on in West Hempstead, Stop and Shop, where a person was fatally shot, two others injured. They are conscious. They are alert, we were told, thank goodness. And all I could think about was Boulder, 10 people killed back on the 22nd of March, including a local police officer there. I'm saying, oh my goodness, here we go. And this was a national story because of all that's been going on here in the supermarket in Boulder, King Supers. We all know what happened on that dreadful day. And, you know, I go back to these red flag laws, even to the Indianapolis shooting a week and a half ago at the FedEx facility where you had this 19-year-old who worked there. And there were plenty of flags regarding Brendan Hull, you know, and somehow we have to fix this. You know, if there are flags on an individual based on mental health and based on family members saying, you know what, he's not of his right mind, suicide by cop with this kid Hull, the 19-year-old, quite frankly, that is an alert for everybody to be on top of the situation. And for some reason, it gets past us when there are some obvious signs. And you can go back to the Lansky days at Newtown and everything else with what was going through that guy and the 20 kids that had their lives cut short and six teachers and whatnot. But in essence, we got to do a better job, you know. And again, you know, we talk about legislation and gun reform and everything else, but, you know, these are laws, red flag laws that help everybody involved, and they are just not being cemented. And it's got to get fixed, Joe.
You know, it's a situation, so, you know, in the prior discussion with regard to racism and police reform, you know, and the power of the jury, and in that instance, the jury was and will continue to be the ultimate final say on what he's going to tolerate, right? Here we need the Supreme Court, and you and I have talked about it. We have a big problem in this country, okay? We have a whole bunch of people who are really hurting and ill, and they have way too much easy access to too many guns, okay? We need the Supreme Court to start weighing in on how we're going to fix that problem. You know, in the entire history of our country, there's only been one decision on the Second Amendment. And let's remember, look, we can't take it and say the Second Amendment is a dumb amendment. You know, I hear people say that all the time. Well, that's dumb, the Second Amendment. You know, the Constitution in this country was put together in a way so that there are checks and balances across the board. And the Second Amendment was included, and the Heller case in 2008 by the Supreme Court confirmed that the Second Amendment gave individuals a right to bear arms so that they could keep a check and balance on the government as well as protect their family and their liberty. Okay? That's why the Second Amendment is there. But the Supreme Court in the Heller case said that right is not absolute, meaning I don't have the right to own a nuclear bomb, okay? And it can be reasonably regulated. But they didn't give any direction as to what reasonably regulated means. And that's where everybody's getting stuck right now. And we need the court to come down and talk about what that looks like. You know, every other one of our rights, none of them are absolute. The First Amendment probably has 400 cases through the Supreme Court about what freedom of speech is and isn't. You know, the old adage, you can say anything you want, you just can't say certain things. You can't say fire in a crowded movie theater. Okay? Here we have one decision saying you have a right to bear arms, it can be reasonably regulated, but nobody knows what that means. And probably the most sensible thing that I've heard is the same way we deal with automobiles. Automobiles are a deadly weapon. More people probably die here on Long Island from automobile accidents than any other sort of accident. Automobiles are regulated because they are a threat to human life in that regard. Okay? And so you need a license. You have to have safety training. There's a test. You have to have insurance. I don't understand why we're not just having those dialogues about firearms. It makes sense. It makes total sense to me. Now, I'm sure people will say, I don't want the government, you know, have to register with the government and them knowing that I have guns because the government, those are the first people they'll come to take their guns away. I don't buy that argument. I don't really buy that argument. I think you should have to register. I think people should be aware that, you know, the government should be aware that there are firearms in a home, particularly if there's a domestic violence or another disturbance in that home. But, you know, law enforcement should be aware whether or not they have a firearm in that home or not. Okay, so I think those are the sorts of things we need to be doing, and the courts need to be requiring the states to do that, or we're never going to have reform. We're just going to constantly be stuck in this argument and in this debate, in this political debate, without making any sort of advancement and protecting lives. So the Supreme Court has to start taking cases on the Second Amendment, and we have to start moving towards a situation where people who can't use firearms responsibly don't have access to firearms. It just has to happen. I mean, you know, enough becomes enough, and we're at that moment again in our country where enough becomes enough. We need to start doing something about it. And it's too political of a hot potato right now, and the Supreme Court has to weigh in, and the high courts in the states have to weigh in, and we have to get some direction from the courts on this, or it's going to keep happening. It's just going to keep happening. And we're going to shake our heads, and we're going to talk about it, and it's just going to keep happening, and people are going to die senselessly. And it's part of the biggest tension and problems we have, too, with police relations, is there's too many handguns. There's just too many guns out there that aren't accounted for. Police officers don't know if somebody has a gun or doesn't or does have a gun. It's got to be fixed, Jay. So we need to get the Supreme Court to start weighing in on what this needs to look like moving forward, or the problem is never going to be solved.
Listen, I agree. And these background checks have to be in place. You know, one case in particular, you know, I'm sure you read it a couple of weeks ago. It didn't get a lot of action in the press, but two brothers down in Allen, Texas, wiped out their entire family and killed themselves. And one of the brothers left a note and actually said in that note that his younger brother was able to get his hands on a gun. Now, both of these kids suffered from depression, okay? But no background checks. The kid was able to get a gun, come back in an hour, go have some lunch, come back in an hour, we'll have your guns ready for you. And the massacre occurred. So, in essence, we got to fix this, okay? We have to do a better job with this red flag stuff and these background checks. Otherwise, we will never have peace, okay? And it's not about taking anybody's guns away and all this with the amendment. It's about doing the right thing. It's called common sense. And I'll tell you, if anything but yesterday left us with something in a positive way, we have to try now and build on the positive nature of things right now in this country. And one of the things is doing a better job regarding weapons and guns and background checks and red flag laws. These are things that can be fixed. It's an easy fix. It's not about party and NRA and everything else. It's about country. And people have to realize that. You know, the Ted Cruzes of this world, they have to realize that right now, Ted, okay, Teddy, sit on the sideline. We're going to take care of this. We don't want to hear from you anymore. Okay? Enough is enough from guys like him. We got to have some common sense back into play and get things accomplished. And we got to build on yesterday, Joe. That's the bottom line.
We have hope, right? So yesterday gave us hope that notwithstanding all of the harsh rhetoric that comes out of Washington and the propaganda that comes out of the supposed mainstream media, that there are rational, reasonable, human beings left here in America. That's what I think the jury told us yesterday, and that's the direction that we need to keep moving in. And I really think that that's a great point. We have hope now. You know, we have hope that notwithstanding all this noise and chaos that we have been living through in these past 14 months, you know, at the end of the day, there is still so much good in people and in this country, and we want it. We want to get it right. And I am tired of hearing the politicians talk about these issues and do nothing. I'm really tired of it. You know, our system is an incredibly wonderful system, and this is one of those instances where the courts have to step up and start taking their role responsibly. Okay. You know, I think Clarence Thomas said that the Second Amendment is the redheaded stepchild to the court because they refuse to take cases. They need to take cases. They need to do their job. They need to see that their role right now is to clarify a decision they handed down in 2008 and give states guidance and start saving our kids. I mean, so many young kids are getting killed with these illegal handguns, and it's causing unnecessary tension with police forces, and everybody's got to do their role. And those jurors did their role, and the police chief and all the police departments that are now retraining and seeking different ways to reform their departments to alleviate tensions are doing their role, and now the courts have to do their role. That's the way we're going to solve this problem, not from the bloviators, I call them, in Washington and other legislators that just want to hear themselves talk. We need action, and we, the people, once again, are the ones who have to force that to occur.
100%. Well said, sir. Joe Campbell with us off the record, on the record. Joe, I knew it would take up a lot of the discussion, and rightfully so. What do we have going on within the great firm of yours? What do you got coming up, sir?
Well, we got a lot of great stuff, Jay. As I told you, we're hiring, right? So we're hiring, we're growing, we're certainly looking to do our part to help move the economy forward. You know, everybody has to do their role. You know, having gone through pandemic and now seeing vaccines being administered and finalized, I sense as much optimism in the business community now than I ever have. And we want to make sure that we're able to meet the needs of our clients and the Long Island community. So there's certainly a lot of really good, exciting stuff going on. You know, the other hat I wear proudly, obviously, is my HIA LI hat. And I chair the task force of the Long Island Innovation Park at Hop Hog. And on Friday, you know, we have a web Zoom conference with the county executives and the county executive and the two town supervisors, Angie Carpenter, Ed Wareheim, and other elected officials to talk about all the great stuff that's going on inside the Innovation Park. So I encourage people to go to HIALI's website and look to attend that, because right now there's amazing, amazing things going on. You know, people need to understand that Long Island business, one of the most critical life preservers for Long Island business during the last 14 months has been HILI. And I'm not saying that because I'm a board member there and a proud member there. I'm saying that because it's just a fact. That organization stayed alive, visible, afloat, and provided so many resources to business. And people just need to check it out. They really do. It's a great organization for business.
Let me tell you something. The job that all you guys do. I mean, and Terry, you know, I mean, I can't say enough. We know how important it is. You know, Silicon Valley, HIA, they're the engines, no question, as far as the economy is concerned, both ends of the spectrum. And the job, just to kind of stay afloat, Joe, it's just amazing what it's been over the last year. And that's what they did. You know, heads above water slightly, improvement. You know, we go over the numbers all the time. You know, the people getting back into the workforce now, improving big way. Even when those on the sideline getting unemployment, and we know the extra bump, but it's good to see when you read the numbers this morning, how they have improved. People are getting back into the workforce. That is so important to the economy and to those small businesses out there. It's just vital, you know? I mean, it's really vital. And I take my hat off to HIA, what you have done. Guys like you, Rich Heumann, and everything else. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And to look at the numbers, I mean, that's a great sign, though, Joe. It really is. Good sign.
Super, super optimistic across across the board. And, we started talking about the verdict yesterday. It's just another positive thing going forward, watching the vaccines being administered, watching the numbers go down, watching businesses start to rehire and regrow their revenue, watching it all come alive from, and especially from the vantage point of being right in the center of the economic hub of Long Island, Jay. It's spring has sprung, and there's nothing but optimism in my future. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Especially as a wonderful Met fan, as you, and you're going to be loving a game and a half on top right now, those Philadelphia Phillies in the young season after 12 games. You'll take that, right? You'll take that.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but you said it, brother.
You know what? Look at my Yankees, who had a scratch and claw last night. I'll take it any way I can get it. But, man, boy, are we bad out in the Bronx. But good stuff, buddy. Great conversation. We look forward to more as we turn the page into May. You stay well. By the way, did you get vaxxed yet or what? Did you get your shot?
Yeah, I got it. I got J&J the Monday before they decided to put it on pause, which I think it's a shame they did that, but they did what they did. So I'm one and done, and we're all good.
I'm modernized. So I feel pretty good. Listen, it's about getting back into the swing again. Hey, great talking with you, pal. We'll talk soon, all right?
You too, Jay. I'll talk to you.